It began with an audacious bid for all of BSkyB. Then the phone hacking of murder victims closed the news of the world. Questions were asked, are the Murdochs fit and proper? Now a wide-ranging inquiry into hacking and police corruption. And this afternoon, Sky News' news about News Corp was this.
Sky News at 3 o'clock in the last hour. News Corp has withdrawn its bid to buy BSkyB. The media group said the situation had become too politicised.
We'll have full details of the wide-ranging new inquiry.
I think it is perfectly acceptable, one at the same time, to obey the law as a government, but to send a message from this House of Commons that this business has got to stop the business of mergers and get on with the business of cleaning its stables.
Also in PM, after the deaths of 29 people, this man has just learned his brother was not guilty of gross negligence.
Over the years, we've had lots of highs and lows. Many times we thought we've achieved our objective of getting justice for the two pilots, only to find that it wasn't the case.
And later, have you noticed how cage fighters are getting younger?
When we do the grappling, it's fun.
With the BBC News tonight, Harriet Cass.
Rupert Murdoch's News Corporation has pulled out of its bid to take full control of British Sky Broadcasting in the face of united political opposition to the deal. MPs had been due to vote on the takeover hours after David Cameron had said the company should stop thinking about mergers and sort out the phone hacking scandal. The Prime Minister and Labour's Ed Miliband have welcomed News Corp's decision. Here's our political correspondent Ben Gagan.
Faced with the possibility of an overwhelming vote against the bid by MPs, this afternoon News Corporation took the dramatic decision to bring an end to its attempt to take over BSkyB. In a statement, News Corp's deputy chairman, Chase Carey, said although the deal would have benefited both companies, it had become clear that it was too difficult to progress in the current climate. Downing Street welcomed the decision, saying the company should now focus on getting its house in order. The Labour leader, Ed Miliband, described it as a victory for people up and down the country who'd been appalled by the revelations of the phone hacking scandal. The media regulator Ofcom says it's still reviewing News Corporation's ownership of the 39% of BSkyB it currently holds.
Earlier in the Commons, David Cameron set out details of the independent public inquiry into phone hacking. Mr. Cameron told MPs that it'll be overseen by Lord Justice Leveson, who'll have the power to call witnesses under oath.
We need a full investigation into wrongdoing in the press and the police, including the failure of the first police investigation. Second, we need a review of regulation of the press. Now, we would like to get on with both these elements as quickly as possible, while being mindful of the ongoing criminal investigations.
News International's legal manager, Tom Crone, has left the company. He was responsible for advising both The Sun and the News of the World on editorial matters before and after publication. The Defence Secretary, Liam Fox, has apologised to the families of two RAF pilots after a review found that they'd been wrongly blamed for a Chinook helicopter crash in which 29 people died. Two RAF air marshals had accused Flight Lieutenants Jonathan Tapper and Richard Cook of gross negligence for the 1994 crash on the Mull of Kintyre. Jonathan Tapper's father Michael and Richard Cook's brother Chris said justice had been done.
It means closure, that's the first thing. And I have to say that there's some very wooden-headed people around.
And we're delighted. The reputation of these two young officers has been restored. And we feel that dreadful wrong has now been righted. Why it's taken 16 years, well, unfortunately, it's quite a complicated story. But at the end of the day, the facts are very simple. There was never any evidence to find the pilots at fault.
Greek police say an 18-year-old British man has been fatally stabbed during a row with a taxi driver on the island of Zante. He's been named as Robert Sebage from Tadley in Hampshire. Four other British men have been wounded, one of them seriously. Two men have been arrested. Three bombs have gone off in India's main commercial city, Mumbai. Reports say at least 13 people have been killed and 100 more have been hurt. Indian officials are treating the explosions as coordinated terrorist attacks. From Mumbai, here's Rajini Vaidyanathan.
Three blasts went off in the city during the evening rush hour. One was said to have exploded in a taxi in the Dadar district. One eyewitness from the scene there told the BBC he saw a bus stop and a car torn apart by an explosion. Another went off in a jewellery shop in the Zaveri Bazaar area in the south, a busy shopping district. The Home Ministry here says the blasts were an act of terror. Unconfirmed reports suggest dozens of people have been injured, many seriously.
A Roman Catholic diocese in Ireland has been severely criticised for its handling of allegations of sexual abuse between 1996 and 2009. The report singled out the Bishop of Cork, John McGee, who resigned last year for failing to follow church rules on reporting abuse. There's been another fall in unemployment, with latest figures showing a drop of 26,000 to fewer than 2.5 million. But there's been a rise in the number of people claiming job seekers allowance, partly because of changes to the benefit system.
It's 5:05, and here are the times you'll need when you fill in your diary tonight. Midday, Prime Minister's question sees David Cameron pressed repeatedly on what he was told about Andy Coulson and when. 12:30. David Cameron announces a phone hacking inquiry and more. We'll have full details of that in a moment. At 2:14, as MPs were preparing to debate whether News Corporation should withdraw its bid for BSkyB, the BBC's Robert Peston tweeted that the bid had been withdrawn. In effect, the motion succeeded before the debate began. The news caught many people by surprise. PM put in a call asking for reaction from the Department of Culture, Media and Sport, and at that point they hadn't heard. Moments later, the Competition Commission said it hadn't been contacted by News Corporation. People there, we were told, were watching the TV screens.
Sky News at 3 o'clock. In the last hour, News Corp has withdrawn its bid to buy BSkyB. The media group said the situation had become too politicised. The decision follows more than a week of revelations and allegations about phone hacking at the News of the World, which of course has been closed.
As news filtered out, Downing Street said the news was welcome. Ed Miliband called it a victory for people up and down the country. Just after three, the board of BSkyB issued a statement which appeared to tout for other suitors.
The board believes BSkyB has a compelling investment case and significant growth opportunities, as demonstrated by its excellent operational and financial performance and strong balance sheet, which provides both strategic and financial flexibility.
For its part, News Corporation said it has become clear that it's too difficult to progress in this climate. News Corporation remains a committed long-term shareholder in BSkyB. We're proud of the success it's achieved and our contribution to it. I've been hearing from veteran tweeter Robert Peston, our business editor, about News Corp's decision.
Well, it's quite simply that Rupert Murdoch would, if he'd pressed ahead with the bid, have been going against the revealed will of the British Parliament, and not just a section, but as far as we could gather, it was likely to be an absolutely overwhelming majority in favour of David Miliband's motion calling for him to abandon the bid. And although that motion didn't have legal force, you know, nonetheless, the words were clear. MPs wanted him to stop. And it's quite difficult to conceive of any individual or business, no matter how powerful, simply going ahead when the British Parliament says, in no uncertain terms, we think you should stop.
And that's it? The offer's off the table forever?
Well, no, in theory. Actually, he can come back in 6 months. Now, it is very unlikely that he would come back in 6 months because the climate, the difficult climate for the takeover, which the company referred to in its statement, is very likely to still be there in 6 months' time. It's incredibly difficult to see how he can revive the takeover bid, well, some would say ever.
There have been lots of surprises from the company in recent weeks. Lots of rumours now that the Murdochs might just get out of British newspapers altogether. You wonder why they're still interested in being in BSkyB, given all the hassle.
Well, BSkyB is an immensely profitable and growing business. You know, they've got 39% of BSkyB. They wanted 100%. They wanted 100% because they wanted to be able to get access to the hundreds of millions of pounds of cash that this business generates, which they can do if they've got 100%. They can get money out with 39%, but just it's harder for them. Now, BSkyB is still growing. It's unusual in respect of Rupert Murdoch's UK assets that it is doing quite so brilliantly. His newspapers aren't doing so well simply because all newspapers face very challenging times. British economy is growing slowly, advertising is under pressure, and then there are the industrial challenges of so much news moving to the internet and re-engineering those businesses to cope with the internet, those news businesses, is proving both expensive and difficult. So it's perfectly clear why he would want to stay, I think, in BSkyB is one of the reasons why lots of investors outside of News Corporation say they really like BSkyB. Very interesting question, what he will do, though, with the rest of his UK operations. Certainly, talking to the company over the past couple of days, they have been saying very negative things about Britain. They've been sort of, you know, talking about all the investment they put into Britain and sort of essentially making what you might call sort of slightly threatening noises about what would happen to the UK if they simply decided they were no longer going to invest in the sort of media and creative industries. We'll have to see whether those sorts of threats turn into a reality, because, you know, as I mentioned, you know, the climate for newspapers is not great. Finding a buyer for 40% of the British newspaper market, which is what Rupert Murdoch controls, will not be easy. The one thing we know about Rupert Murdoch is he's a pretty ruthlessly businessman when it comes to taking decisions that aren't completely self-destructive. You know, a fire sale of those assets, simply selling them to the first bidder, would cost him a fortune. If he's going to sell those businesses, he would want to do it in an orderly way, and he'd want to do it, you know, to maximise profits. And, you know, in the current climate, finding a buyer for those businesses will not be easy.
Robert Peston, he meant Ed, not David Miliband. We'll catch up with Nick Robinson in a moment, but it's worth keeping in mind that regardless of this announcement from News Corp today, the broadcasting regulator Ofcom is still reviewing whether it's a fit and proper company to retain that 39% of BSkyB. Professor Stuart Purvis used to be a senior executive at Ofcom. Are you as surprised as many people are about today's announcement?
I was slightly surprised because it goes against the grain of the company's ethos, its culture, which is to kind of fight in these situations. But I agree with Robert that I think they will probably come back to this at some point, because from News Corp's point of view, it just makes business sense to get BSkyB into the same kind of ownership pattern as they have for Fox in America and they have it in Asia. You could just see why they would want to do that. And we shouldn't assume that Rupert Murdoch will be there forever. We shouldn't assume that the British newspapers will be there forever. So there just may be a point, and who can tell where it is when this comes back on the table. But if, of course, the newspaper issue has gone away by then, it becomes a much simpler proposition.
And on the newspapers, all sorts of rumours swirling about this afternoon that we could get another announcement from News Corp today. We'll see what happens. I just wonder, though, in terms of Ofcom, whether the ball will be taken out of Rupert Murdoch's hands. Could Ofcom turn around and say, not on your Nelly?
Yes, well, let's be clear. All the issues, all the processes that were related to the acquisition, they all fall away now until and unless News Corp makes another bid. The issue which is left on the table, because it's always on the table, because it's a continuing duty that Ofcom has, is to look at the ownership of those who hold broadcasting licences and to decide whether those are fit and proper people. That is as relevant as ever, and some would say it's more relevant as after revelations of the past week. So Ofcom, in its own time, will have to come to a conclusion about whether News International, News Corp, whoever, in a sense, is holding the shares in BSkyB at the time, are fit and proper people to hold those shares, and what the impact is, therefore, on the holding of the BSkyB licence.
Stuart Purvis, thank you for that. Nick Robinson, what do you make of all this?
Well, it is an extraordinary day, an extraordinary turnaround. In a sense, I've never seen before in my adult life, Eddie, the politicians, the political classes, stand up to Rupert Murdoch and win. And that is what happened today. The Labour leader, Ed Miliband, by threatening this motion in the House of Commons, forced the government's hand. They were determined not to march into lobbies that would suggest that they were somehow pro-Murdoch. It became clear, therefore, that Parliament, almost to a man and woman, would oppose this takeover of BSkyB, and Rupert Murdoch had backed off. Now, whether that was the key reason, or whether pressure from his shareholders was, or whether his own view of what was happening inside his organisation did it, it's happened, and it's not happened before.
In terms of whether Rupert Murdoch or James Murdoch or Rebecca Brooks might give evidence to MPs next week, are they still obliged to? Would they still like them to, do you think?
Not the two Murdochs, because they're foreign citizens and can't be obliged. Rebecca Brooks, I'm sure, will turn up. If she didn't, she could be summoned. But there are no powers for that committee to force the Murdochs to turn up. My guess would be that they might well ensure that James Murdoch comes along. I'd be amazed if Rupert Murdoch agrees to come to the House of Commons. I think he might struggle to be polite in the face of the sort of questioning that we saw leading policemen go through yesterday. But this is an organisation that is clearly in retreat and is protecting itself. What its next move will be, none of us can quite predict, it could have extraordinary consequences, because if it chooses to get rid of its newspapers, who, as you were discussing, will buy them? What will the consequences then be for the diversity of the media? What will be the consequences for what we once used to call rather casually the Tory press? I mean, the real sense I have today is of an avalanche, really, Eddie. In a sense, this hacking saga has built up like an avalanche does, bit by bit, layer by layer. It showed no sign of moving, and then whoomph, gravity could not be defied. It swept away the News of the World. It swept away the BSkyB bid, and we're waiting to see what next.
And on the debate which is taking place now in the Commons, in a sense perhaps a redundant debate, but I'm sure the arguments will be worth hearing. We're going to discuss a bit later in the programme. I'd be keen to hear your view. What about those MPs who've suddenly turned on Rupert Murdoch? Where were they 2 weeks ago and 2 months ago and 2 years ago?
Well, where were all of them, really, Eddie? There are one or two people who can really say, I told you so. The Labour backbencher Tom Watson is able to say that. Chris Bryant is able to say that. Vince Cable, the business secretary, might even say it on the grounds that, although he didn't mean to say it in public, he was recorded by the Daily Telegraph saying he wanted to go to war with Rupert Murdoch. It was his view. But almost no one else can say it. They went to his parties. They cheered in the cheer. They didn't criticise him. And very few stood up to say it should stop. But you're right. There is suddenly a mood where you cannot discover a man or woman in this building, I'm talking to you from the House of Commons, who will say that they think Rupert Murdoch or James Murdoch or News International are a good thing. Whereas if you'd asked me to do it for the programme 2 to 3 weeks ago, I doubt, other than the two or three I've mentioned, I would have got a single person on tape to criticise them.
Nick, thank you. Nick Robinson, our political editor at Westminster. We'll have that discussion a bit later in the programme. Coming next, we'll have full details of the new inquiry that's just been announced this afternoon. Harriet Cass has the headlines.
Rupert Murdoch's News Corporation has withdrawn from its bid to take full control of British Sky Broadcasting. David Cameron has welcomed the announcement. The regulator Ofcom says it's still reviewing News Corp's existing ownership of 39% of BSkyB as a fit and proper broadcast licence holder. The Defence Secretary Liam Fox has apologised to the families of two RAF pilots after a review found they'd been wrongly accused of gross negligence for a Chinook helicopter disaster in which 29 people died. At least 17 people have been killed in three bomb attacks in India's financial capital, Mumbai.
This lunchtime in the House of Commons, the announcement of what's being referred to as the phone hacking inquiry, but which is a good deal broader than that. One inquiry, one judge. We'll tell you more about him in a moment. His inquiry will be split into two parts. The full terms of reference will be consulted upon, but here's what we know from the draft. The first part of the inquiry will have the broadest brief and should report within a year. It'll look at the culture, practices and ethics of the press, including what goes on between the press and politicians and between the press and the police. Part one of the inquiry will also examine press regulation. Part two will not report within a year because of ongoing criminal proceedings and is much more focused on events surrounding News International, the extent of broken rules or laws, and the standard of corporate governance at News International and at other newspapers. It'll examine how the police performed, including the extent of corrupt payments. David Cameron said Lord Leveson would be assisted by an as-yet-unnamed panel of senior figures who have expertise in media, broadcasting, regulation and government.
The inquiry will be established under the 2005 Inquiries Act, which means it will have the power to summon witnesses, including newspaper reporters, management, proprietors, policemen, and politicians of all parties, to give evidence under oath and in public. Proprietors was included in that list.
Here's what the Prime Minister ultimately wants in about a year's time.
He will make recommendations for a new, more effective way of regulating the press. One that supports their freedom, plurality and independence from government, but which also demands the highest ethical and professional standards. He will also make recommendations about the future conduct of relations between politicians and the press.
But the Prime Minister had more to say than just announce the inquiry. He said the Independent Police Complaints Commission had been supervising the Metropolitan Police's efforts to identify any corrupt officers. He said they would go wherever the evidence led them and would have full powers to investigate any police wrongdoing. But what about politicians and the press?
One of the reasons we got into this situation is because over the decades, politicians and the press have spent time courting support not confronting the problems. So I will be consulting the Cabinet Secretary on an amendment to the Ministerial Code to require ministers to record all meetings with newspaper and other media proprietors, senior editors and executives, regardless of the nature of the meeting. Permanent secretaries and special advisers will also be required to record such meetings. This information should be published quarterly. It is a first for our country, and alongside the other steps we're taking, will help make the UK government one of the most transparent in the world. I'll also be discussing this with the opposition, and perhaps we can adopt this on a cross-party basis.
Well, Ed Miliband said the government was following his party's advice in opting for a broader inquiry.
I welcome the proposal about transparency, and I hope and expect he will ensure that that proposal is implemented in a retrospective way back to the last general election, so he will publish all of the details, all of the details of the meetings that he had, and indeed I will publish all of the details of the meetings I had as well.
Something that might be worth noting is that while Ed Miliband said his instinct was for self-regulation that worked, the Prime Minister chose a different form of words.
I think self-regulation has got quite a bad name now because it did miss too many things. Now, I don't want to move to a world of full statutory regulation. I worked in an industry that was statutory regulated, television. It works, but I don't think it's right for the press. But we'll have to be guided by what this inquiry finds.
As promised, let's talk a little more about Lord Leveson, who's going to be in charge of this two-part inquiry. Our reporter John Sudworth has been digging, respectfully and without paying anyone, into his background. That's true, John, isn't it?
Well, I bought a cup of tea earlier, but Lord Leveson is a senior judge, although some have suggested perhaps not one with the highest of public profiles. Lord Justice Who is the headline on the Telegraph website this afternoon, followed by an article in which he's described as an unknown quantity. However, those who do know him suggest that as an appeal court judge and a barrister before that, with a long track record in criminal and commercial law, Lord Justice Leveson is a good choice to head what's obviously going to be a high-profile and politically charged inquiry. Christopher Kinch QC is chairman of the Criminal Bar Association.
He practiced in crime, but also in commercial work as a barrister. He had a reputation as a tough and uncompromising advocate. I suppose he became best known for prosecuting Rose West towards the end of his career at the bar.
And as a judge, and in terms of the qualities then that he might bring to this inquiry, how does he come across in court?
Certainly, he's a tough tribunal. You need to be prepared. He doesn't suffer fools gladly. He will certainly let you know if he thinks you've made a mess of things. But I suppose the quality that he might best bring to bear in this inquiry is that he recognises flannel when he sees it. And it would be a big mistake for anyone who's called before the inquiry to think that they're going to get away with waffle or prevarication.
It's also worth noting that Lord Justice Leveson is no stranger to controversy because of his position as chairman of the Sentencing Council for England and Wales, a body that draws up guidelines on appropriate punishments for particular crimes. In recent months, he's found himself defending the council's policy. Here he is on Five Live back in March, explaining why he thinks judges should make more use of non-custodial community sentences.
Most people who receive short jail sentences have a constellation of problems. They may be addicted to drugs, they may have housing problems, they may have difficult social relationships, and they steal or commit petty crime to fund their addiction or for whatever. Those problems are not going to be fixed in 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 3 months. They've been built up of a lifetime of difficulty. So for those cases, the fact is that the sentence of imprisonment is not going suddenly to change their lives.
Interestingly, given the task he's now been given, those kind of views have brought criticism from at least one News International publication in the past, with the Sun newspaper earlier this year putting him on a list of what they called softy judges. Well, now, of course, they're about to find out just how soft he really is.
5.30 now, the BBC News from Harriet Cass.
Politicians of all parties have welcomed the decision by Rupert Murdoch's media group News Corporation to withdraw its controversial bid for a full takeover of BSky B. The bid has been derailed by the phone hacking scandal at the News of the World. Downing Street has welcomed the development, and a short time ago, the Labour leader Ed Miliband addressed MPs in a motion he'd originally proposed against News Corp's takeover.
The decision made by News Corporation was not the decision they wanted to make. Yeah. It may have been announced before this debate, but it would not have happened without it. Yeah. Above all, this is a victory for people, the good, decent people of Britain.
Earlier, David Cameron announced the terms of the public inquiry into the phone hacking scandal. It'll have the power to summon newspaper proprietors, journalists, police and politicians to give evidence under oath and in public. News International's legal manager Tom Crone has left the company. It's understood he hasn't resigned but was given 3 months' notice. The Defence Secretary Liam Fox has apologised to the families of two RAF pilots wrongly accused of negligence over the 1994 Chinook helicopter crash on the Mull of Kintyre, in which 29 people died. A fresh review has found that Flight Lieutenants Jonathan Tapper and Richard Cook should not have been blamed for the crash. Greek police say an 18-year-old British man has been fatally stabbed during a row with a taxi driver on the island of Zante. He's been named as Robert Sebage from Hampshire. Two men have been arrested. At least 17 people are reported to have been killed and more than 100 others wounded in three explosions during the evening rush hour in the Indian city of Mumbai. Officials say it was a coordinated terrorist attack. Two prisons are to be closed and eight more privatised as part of plans to cut costs announced by the Ministry of Justice. Latchmere House Prison in West London and Brock Hill in the West Midlands will shut in September. The currency and stock markets in London, the 100 share index closed up 37 at 5,906. A short while ago in New York, the Dow Jones was up 137 points at 12,584. Against the dollar, the pound is trading at $1.61. And against the euro, it's at €1.14, which makes the euro worth 88 pence.
Thanks, Harriet. This time last night, we broadcast part of an extensive interview Gordon Brown gave to the BBC about various things, his son's medical condition, his bank accounts and News International's activities. Today's Sun front page has a two-word blast for the former Prime Minister, Brown wrong. Well, our reporter Terry Stiasny has been sorting through what's been said and what it might mean. Also ahead in the next few moments, we'll tell you what Gordon Brown is saying right now in the House of Commons about News International. That's just ahead. Let's talk about this spat between Gordon Brown and News International. Our reporter Terry Stiasny is here. Remind us what Gordon Brown said in that interview last night.
Well, yes, as we heard on PM yesterday, Gordon Brown gave a lengthy interview to the BBC in which he said that he believed that some of his private information, including things like building society accounts, legal documents and tax documents, had been accessed wrongly. And he also spoke about how a story about the health of his son, Fraser, who has cystic fibrosis, had come to appear in the Sun newspaper. And here's a little taste of what he told the BBC's Glenn Campbell.
We're thinking about our family, but there's nothing that you can do about it. You're in public life and this story appears. You don't know how it's appeared. I've not questioned how it appeared. I've not made any allegations about how it appeared. I've not made any claims about it appeared. But the fact is, it did appear.
So as you heard there, Gordon Brown didn't directly say exactly how he thought his son's medical condition had become public, and it later, of course, appeared in The Sun. But later in the interview, he did say, in a list of other breaches of his privacy, which he believed had been committed, that he believed medical records had been broken into. And in a long-awaited appearance now, Gordon Brown has just been standing on his feet in the House of Commons a few minutes ago. He's rarely spoken in the House of Commons since leaving office as Prime Minister. He said that he wasn't there to speak about himself, but about those who could not defend themselves. And he had some very harsh words for News International.
Others have said that in their behaviour towards those without a voice of their own, News International descended from the gutter to the sewers. The tragedy, Mr. Speaker, is that they let the rats out of the sewers.
But Terry, The Sun has got a different version of events. What's the paper saying?
Yes, absolutely, Eddie. In The Sun this morning, the newspaper said that it was able to assure the Brown family that we did not access the medical records of their son, nor did we commission anyone to do so. And the newspaper released a video of the man who it says was its source for that story. The Sun says the man's the father of a child who also has cystic fibrosis, like Gordon Brown's son. The Sun didn't name the man, and they also disguised his voice, as you can hear now.
Basically, you know, when you've got a child with cystic fibrosis, you know, it's you know, a big thing. And I obviously knew about this probably a couple of weeks before I contacted yourself, and, you know, I was expecting day after day to hear the news, because obviously, you know, Gordon Brown at the time, a chancellor looking to be the Prime Minister, the next Prime Minister, you know, he's a quite important person, and it was very sad to hear the news through the grapevine that his son had cystic fibrosis. But obviously, you know, a man of that calibre can, you know, make a few phone calls and make a lot of things happen, and the Cystic Fibrosis Trust at the end of the day. So that was the main reason in coming forward.
So obviously a difference there. And also in the last few minutes in the House of Commons, it's been interesting quite how vocal the former Prime Minister Gordon Brown has been. And he described how he'd been attacked many times by The Sun and other newspapers in the past. Headlines, for example, calling him Dr. Evil. So there's no doubt that he feels this as something very personal, very close to his heart.
All right, Terry Stiersny, thank you. A news update now from Harriet.
Rupert Murdoch's News Corporation has abandoned its bid to take full control of British Sky Broadcasting. Politicians from all the main parties have welcomed the decision. A short time ago, the former Prime Minister, Gordon Brown, told MPs that News International had made systematic use of unlawful techniques and had gone from the gutter to the sewers. The government has apologised to the families of two RAF pilots wrongly blamed for the Mull of Kintyre helicopter crash. At least 17 people have been killed in three bomb explosions in India's financial capital, Mumbai.
Right now in the House of Commons, MPs are debating whether something should be stopped that's already been stopped. Vicky Young is at Westminster. This is the News Corporation takeover of B Sky B. Has the wind been taken out of MPs' sails?
Well, Ed, almost the opposite. The debate has certainly been overtaken by events, and Ed Miliband would obviously have had to do a bit of a rewrite of his speech. But MPs across the House certainly weren't deflated. In fact, quite the opposite. They see this as an example of Parliament flexing its muscles. Now, the Labour leader is taking most of the credit for what's happened, and he said that this was no ordinary day.
The will of Parliament was clear. The will of the public was clear. And now Britain's most powerful media owner has had to bend to that will.
So that's a flavour of what most MPs were saying. Ed Miliband said that this wasn't a decision that Rupert Murdoch wanted to make. He said it was pressure from MPs that forced him into it, and he was really fighting to get onto that moral high ground.
Today, Parliament has shown an ability to speak without fear or favour. To speak to our great traditions. To show that we can hold power to account and that nobody is above the law. To paraphrase the late Lord Denning, be ye ever so high, the people are above you.
Now, Ed Miliband said today that this was a time for the House to speak with one voice. But it has to be said it wasn't all mutual congratulations and cross-party unity. This was the Conservative backbencher, Christopher Pincher.
Was he saying these things to Rupert Murdoch when he was eating his canapes 3 weeks ago?
Now, there were a lot of jeers at that, but it has to be said that MPs on all sides were really trying to distance themselves from the Murdoch empire. Now, the leader of the House, Sir George Young, who was there today, the Prime Minister was not responding to Ed Miliband. He said that this was a very important example of why Parliament mattered.
This chamber, which some has argued was losing its relevance and power, has in fact been leading the public debate over the past fortnight with the SO24 debate, statements and select committee hearings all being televised live. Mr. Speaker, no one can say today, as they did 2 years ago, that Parliament is irrelevant.
Now, the other person we've been hearing from this afternoon at some length is the former Prime Minister, Gordon Brown. It's only the second time he's spoken in the Commons since the general election. Now, he wants to make it clear that he'd had no private deals with the Murdoch empire. He said the relationship between his administration and News International was neither cosy nor comfortable. He said, look at the Sun newspaper. It had him depicted as Dr. Evil, hardly evidence of a close relationship. But he couldn't resist a dig at the man who'd replaced him as Prime Minister.
It's like the old days, with one exception. If I had not come to the House this afternoon when I was Prime Minister in a debate in which the Prime Minister is implicated, I hesitate to think what these members...
So they weren't exactly speaking with one voice, but I think there are many MPs who feel that the reputation of the Commons has been trashed over the expenses scandal, and today they seemed rejuvenated.
Vicky, thanks for that. To pick up on a point that one MP made there in Vicky's report, and something we discussed with Nick Robinson earlier in the programme, where were some of these MPs only a few weeks ago when Rupert Murdoch's bid looked like it was being waved through? Nick Jones is a political journalist who's worked in his long career at the BBC and on newspapers. He's written several books, including Sultans of Spin. Bob Marshall-Andrews is a barrister, until recently a Labour MP, and his new book, Off Message, about his time in Parliament, gives you some idea of where he comes from. And Nick Jones, a fortnight ago, the idea that all of these MPs would be publicly rebelling against Rupert Murdoch would have been fanciful. Why weren't they speaking up then?
They knew, and I think everyone in the political and journalistic world knows, that media proprietors are extremely powerful people, and the patronage that they've been dispensing for decades now, and members of Parliament want part of that patronage, in the sense that they like favourable coverage, and they are prepared to do deals with the media, whether it's for the commercial agenda of the companies, and we know that there's evidence of that, or whether it's at the level of a backbench MP who's only too prepared to give a journalist some information. And I think there's no doubt about it that that is the case, that people in power are prepared to trade information with their favoured journalists.
Bob Marshall-Andrews, are some of those MPs complaining about the Murdoch press now being a bit hypocritical because of the very relationships that Nick Jones is talking about?
Well, I think that there is a measure of truth in what Nick Jones has said. Certainly what we are seeing here is a transformation in the realities of power. And for 20 years, we have had an extremely undesirable power structure, where an enfeebled parliament, very largely consisting of an increasing number of professional members of parliament, have genuflected to government, and government has genuflected to Rupert Murdoch and the other oligarchs in the... Where I disagree with Nick, actually, and I disagree with Nick Robinson earlier, is that in my time in Parliament, there were a very large number of backbench members of Parliament who made no secret of their contempt, firstly for Rupert Murdoch, and secondly for the relationship between government and Rupert Murdoch. What one sees now is a late flowering in parliamentary democracy, and three cheers for that. If these stables are to be cleansed, then they need to be cleansed between government and Murdoch and other oligarchs in the press, but also it is golden opportunity for parliamentary democracy to reassert itself, and I cannot tell you how delighted I am to see it.
And Bob Marshall-Andrews, what's in it, leaving Rupert Murdoch and his particular newspapers to one side, what's in it for any backbench MP to privately brief any journalist?
Oh, I think it's extremely important. When I was in Parliament, the relationship with the press was one of the very few ways in which you could control the executive. The whole process of Parliament had been so corrupted and enfeebled, largely by the executive, but with the connivance of many backbenchers, that the only way that you could stand toe-to-toe with ministers and the executive was by being on or in the media, and that was precisely what you had to use. That does not, of course, mean that you were subservient to them.
But that relationship, I suppose, went on in the shadows a little bit.
No, not at all. I don't think it did. I certainly briefed a large number of journalists if I thought that what was being said within New Labour, certainly on issues of civil liberty, should be made public. But there was certainly no reciprocal arrangement.
Nick Jones, that argument from Bob Marshall-Andrews that in a sense that relationship between backbenchers and the press gave them some power and some influence. Do you buy that?
Oh, I do buy that, yes. I mean, the one power of a trader of information, of a spin doctor, if you like, is the power that they can decide who is going to get the information. Now, where I disagree with Bob Marshall Andrews is that so much of the conversations between politicians and journalists are now on an anonymous basis. They are off the record.
Wasn't it always that way?
Well, no. You couldn't get a story when I was on the Times in the 60s. You couldn't get the front page splash unless you had some quotes and some identification. Now, of course, it's possible to have stories based, almost entirely speculative stories, on anonymous sources. And, of course, that is the trade that has developed at Westminster, where there is this two-way trade in the sense that the politicians will feed information anonymously. And, of course, we, the journalists, well, we lap it up because, of course, we are getting access to the sort of information that we wouldn't otherwise have got.
Up to a point. I mean, Nick knows perfectly well, and we know each other well and operated together. I mean, I always refused to give anonymous information, and many of my colleagues did as well. I mean, if I said something I wanted and indeed required my name to be on it, I mean, and that is part of the process. Now, whether that happens in government or not is another matter. But what I think Nick is agreeing with me about is that the relationship between backbenchers and the press is enormously important, because that is what controls the executive.
All right. Listen, thank you both for taking the time, Bob Marshall Andrews and Nick Jones. This is PM. I'm Eddie Mayer. We'll be here tomorrow at 5. Join me if you can.
BBC News at 6 o'clock. This is Zeb Soans. Good evening. The deal that Rupert Murdoch's News Corporation has battled for months to push through has collapsed. It's withdrawn its bid for the satellite TV broadcaster BSkyB. All the main political parties have welcomed the news. Tonight we'll explain the implications for Mr. Murdoch's global media empire and examine how he achieved such a dominant position. There have been further developments arising from the phone hacking scandal at the News of the World. The Prime Minister has set out the terms of the inquiry into the press and named the judge who'll conduct it. Newspapers and their owners will be closely scrutinised. In other news, the Defence Secretary has apologised to the families of the helicopter pilots in the Mull of Kintyre crash after a new report cleared them of negligence. And the number of people out of work has again fallen. Over the past 40 years, Rupert Murdoch has grown accustomed to getting his own way. Today, his multi-billion-pound global media empire, News Corporation, had to bow to the pressure battering its British subsidiary, News International. It announced it was dropping its long-held ambition to take full ownership of BSkyB, acknowledging that the deal had become too difficult to progress in this climate. The announcement came as MPs prepared to debate a motion backed by all three main parties, urging Mr. Murdoch to scrap the bid. David Cameron and Ed Miliband quickly welcomed it.
I think this is the right decision. I've been saying that this company clearly needs to sort out the problems there are at News International, at the News of the World. That must be the priority, not takeovers. So the right decision, but also the right decision for the country too.
This is a victory for people up and down this country who have been appalled by the revelations about phone hacking, who have thought it's beyond belief that Mr. Murdoch could, when this criminal investigation is going on, expand his stake in the British media.
Just 10 days ago, News Corp appeared to have cleared the hurdles standing in the way of a takeover. Then a sometimes arcane saga of phone hacking exploded into a full-blown scandal involving allegations that the News of the World had intercepted murder victims' voicemails and made illegal payments to police officers. Our business editor, Robert Peston, reports on a dramatic climb down by News Corporation.
For Rupert Murdoch to be told by politicians, who till recently were seen by some as his creatures, that he shouldn't press ahead with his attempt to own all of BSkyB, and then to have to do what they urged, well, it's a humiliation of a kind that is somewhat unusual for him. And that humiliation comes only a few days after another act that caused him acute pain, the closure of the News of the World, once his favourite newspaper. Mr Murdoch was keen to increase his ownership of British Sky Broadcasting from 39% to 100% because it would have given him access to the vast amounts of cash generated by the UK's biggest television business. In the past year, BSkyB's profits were around £1 billion, which would have been very useful to Mr Murdoch's news corporation at a time when its British newspapers have been struggling to maintain their revenues. Of course, it would be wrong to overstate the damage to his news corporation empire, owner of vast chunks of the US and global media industry. It still remains immensely profitable, and News Corporation still owns a big chunk of BSkyB, a business that bucked the recent recession to continue increasing its profits. But no one, including Mr Murdoch, can be certain what will emerge from either the police investigation or the judge-led public inquiry into alleged wrongdoing at the News of the World. With the police as yet having contacted only the tiniest fraction of the thousands of people whose phones may have been hacked by a private detective in the employ of the News of the World, it's probable that there'll be week after week of new shocking disclosures about the privacy of individuals being invaded improperly. And overnight, there have been signs of contagion to other countries where News Corporation has important assets. Senator Jay Rockefeller, the chairman of the Senate's Commerce Committee, urged US government agencies to probe whether the News of the World instigated attempts to hack the phones of 9/11 victims and other American citizens. So, there could be further damage to the reputation of News Corporation, damage which could alienate advertisers and buyers of its newspaper and entertainment. As for BSkyB's other shareholders, they've also paid a price from the failure of the takeover. BSkyB's share price has fallen around 20% over the past 9 days, wiping almost £3 billion from the value of the company. So what next for Rupert Murdoch? Well, his lieutenants mutter about him reducing his commitment to the UK. But given his ownership of 40% of the British newspaper industry, at a time when that industry is hardly booming, he won't find it easy to sell out in a country that has been a home from home for him for decades.
The family of Millie Dowler, the murdered schoolgirl whose phone is alleged to have been hacked by the News of the World, met Mr Cameron this afternoon at Downing Street. Afterwards, their solicitor, Mark Lewis, welcomed News Corporation's decision to drop its bid for BSkyB as a victory for the public.
This shows, actually, the power of the public, really, to stand up to something. However big an organisation is, however big, however far-reaching, however worldwide, to stand up and say, no, something isn't right. And like most scandals, this wasn't about the scandal itself, the underlying conduct. It was about the attempts to cover it up. And when people cover up things, they are not fit and proper to run something.
Last November, the business secretary, Vince Cable, asked the media regulator Ofcom to investigate the implications of the proposed takeover. But within weeks, Mr. Cable had been stripped of his regulatory role after he was recorded telling undercover reporters he'd declared war on the Murdoch empire. This afternoon, he was asked if he thought the bid could be revived in the future.
It's very difficult after what's happened to imagine that this is possibly now going to come back. Parliament was absolutely united today that the bid should be withdrawn. The conditions have changed. We've now got to concentrate on getting things right in future.
Before the announcement from News Corporation, David Cameron had come under persistent attack in the Commons over his decision to employ the former editor of the News of the World, Andy Coulson, as his communications director. In an increasingly heated exchanges, the Labour leader Ed Miliband demanded to know why the Prime Minister had continued to hire Mr Coulson despite receiving warnings about his suitability. Within the past half hour, the former Prime Minister, Gordon Brown, has made a scathing attack on News International from the backbenchers. Our political correspondent, Ben Wright, reports.
This was a raucous reminder of how the phone hacking scandal could still cause serious political trouble. David Cameron said a firestorm had engulfed the press, police and politics, and the two front benches were at one in calling for News Corporation to abandon its bid for BSkyB. But Labour's leader, Ed Miliband, then focused on the appointment of the Prime Minister's former communications chief, Andy Coulson. The Prime Minister said he hadn't seen the information from The Guardian that was passed on to his staff. To Mr Miliband's incredulity.
The Prime Minister must now publish the fullest account of all the information that was provided and what he did and why those warnings went unheeded. And he should do most of all, he should apologise for the catastrophic error of judgment he made in hiring Andy Coulson.
The Prime Minister said the information didn't add anything to the assurances Mr. Coulson had given him about his tenure at the News of the World. But David Cameron then tried to put as much distance as possible between Number 10 and its former Director of Communications.
If I was lied to, if the police were lied to, if the Select Committee was lied to, it would be a matter of deep regret and a matter for a criminal prosecution.
Ed Miliband has put a former News International journalist in charge of his communications, as David Cameron pointed out. But it's the circumstances surrounding Andy Coulson's appointment that remain a potential problem for Number 10. In the House of Commons now, MPs are having their debate about Rupert Murdoch's takeover plans, even though News Corporation preempted fresh condemnation from across the House of Commons by withdrawing its bid for BSkyB. The former Prime Minister, Gordon Brown, told MPs that the scandal had revealed law-breaking on an industrial scale.
Others have said that in their behaviour towards those without a voice of their own, News International descended from the gutter to the sewers. The tragedy, Mr. Speaker, is that they let the rats out of the sewers.
After many years courting Rupert Murdoch's executives and papers, politicians from all parties now find themselves condemning the actions of his British company.
After Prime Minister's questions, Mr. Cameron gave details of the independent public inquiry the government has ordered into the phone hacking scandal. It will be led by a senior judge, Lord Justice Leveson, who will have the power to summon journalists, police officers, politicians and newspaper proprietors to give evidence under oath. The inquiry will begin as quickly as possible and will be in two parts: an investigation of wrongdoing in the press and the police, and a wider review of press ethics, its regulation and the relationship between journalists, politicians and the police. Mr. Cameron said the country and the House had to confront an episode that was simply disgraceful.
We must, I think, at all times keep front and centre the real victims of this. Relatives of those who died at the hands of terrorism, war heroes, murder victims, people who have already suffered in a way that we can barely imagine, they have been made to suffer all over again. Mr. Speaker, I believe we all want the same thing. We want press, police and politicians that serve the public.
Our Home Affairs correspondent Danny Shaw looks at the scope and remit of the inquiry and the man who will be leading it.
In his first public statement since being appointed to head the inquiry, Sir Brian Leveson suggested there was one simple question at its heart: who guards the guardians? The press provided an essential check on all aspects of public life, he said. That was why any failure within the media affected everyone. The culture, practices and ethics of the press, including their relations with politicians and police, will be examined in the first part of the inquiry, to be completed within a year. The second stage, which will be delayed so as not to prejudice ongoing criminal investigations, will examine the extent of unlawful or improper conduct at News International and other newspaper organisations. It'll look at the way police investigated phone hacking and claims that officers received payments from journalists. Sir Brian Leveson said work would start immediately on practical arrangements to get the inquiry underway. Sir Brian, who's 62, is an appeal court judge and chairman of the Sentencing Council. He spent many years as a barrister and in 1995 successfully prosecuted Rosemary West, Britain's most prolific female serial killer. Regarded by colleagues as down-to-earth and straight-talking, Sir Brian is unusual among the judiciary in that he's been prepared on a number of occasions to give interviews to the media. As well as the inquiry, there's to be a review of corruption in the police service, and the Metropolitan Police is to be given advice from a senior public figure about its relationship with the press.
Mr. Cameron said the inquiry would be asked to come up with a better way of regulating the press and would also examine the broader question of cross-media ownership. Our media correspondent, Torrin Douglas, has been examining the implications.
For the press, nothing will be off-limits under the inquiry's terms of reference. With a panel of media and legal experts, Sir Brian Leveson will make recommendations for a new regulatory regime, for future relations between politicians and the press, and how the authorities should handle future concerns about press behaviour, media policy and cross-media ownership. He'll be able to summon whoever he chooses. John Whittingdale, chairman of the Commons Culture, Media and Sport Committee, said the position of the press would never be the same again.
Clearly, there is going to need to be a stronger regulatory framework
governing the behaviour of the press. That is something the judicial inquiry is going to examine as well. The Prime Minister has already announced certain measures to ensure that there is full transparency about the dealings between government and politicians and the press. I think we're looking at a completely different picture as a result of this.
But Mr. Whittingdale said the freedom of the press must also be safeguarded because it was newspapers that had exposed the phone hacking. He said he didn't want a government body regulating the press. Yet that goes to the heart of the inquiry. How far will it investigate newspaper ethics, and how far wider media issues such as the ownership of broadcasters, which are regulated by Ofcom? What's clear is that it's not only the News of the World and its publishers who'll be interrogated. Other newspapers will be asked about their behaviour too.
News International's long-serving legal manager Tom Crone is leaving the company. Mr. Crone was responsible for advising the News of the World and The Sun on editorial matters. In 2009, he told MPs that only two people working for the News of the World had been involved in phone hacking. Since Rupert Murdoch entered the British newspaper market in 1968, he's suffered numerous setbacks, but he still managed to build what today amounts to the second largest media empire in the world. Our business correspondent, Rory Kethlen-Jones, assesses Mr. Murdoch's career.
From Beaverbrook to William Randolph Hearst, newspaper barons have struck fear into politicians and shaped our view of the world. Rupert Murdoch can claim to have been as influential as any of them. First in Australia, then in Britain, and finally in the United States, he has shown he's prepared to do whatever it takes, from breaking the print unions to changing his nationality in order to preserve and build his media empire. Throughout, he's shown a gambler's instinct, most notably when launching Sky TV in 1989. Here's how he responded then when asked how much
Of course. I mean, nothing's forever, but for several years, certainly.
It did take many years for Sky to make money, and in the early 1990s, Murdoch's empire came close to collapse. Now its finances are secure, but its power and influence may never be the same again. What's more, the man whose father was an Australian newspaper proprietor may now be wondering whether he will pass the leadership of his empire on to the next generation. Rupert Murdoch has been written off before and come back to confound his enemies. But the odds on his son James being allowed to lead the business must surely have lengthened.